Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thanks for coming back to Kudzu Killers. I'm here with Lark today.
Hey, everybody.
And we're going to be discussing a man that my mama wants us to talk about.
Hey, Mama.
Because he was found in the little town she lives in. His name
That's
is Robert.
Creepy.
Yeah, it is. Robert Eugene Brashers. Robert was a lot busier than people thought he was at the time of his death. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But he was born on March 13th, 1958 in Newport News, Virginia. How he ended up in a little town in Arkansas, I don't know. I couldn't even find any information on how he got there or why he was there. But it seems like he'd been in and out of prison for most of his adult life. And like we see over and over again in these cases of serial killers, they let him out early. Every time he got in trouble, he'd get out early. And so, you know, wasn't much of a deterrent to him. He just went out and did something again.
No consequences.
No.
Why shouldn't I do it again?
Well, I mean, he did get consequences, but, you know, it's like if he got sentenced to 20 years, he served 3. Well.
Well, that's not really a consequence where he's probably concerned. And also, too, most serial killers, this is like a... It's like an obsession, isn't it? It's not like they can be rehabilitated.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It's like a sociopathic behavior. You know, they don't have any feelings for the people that they do these things to. So it doesn't really work to think you're rehabilitating him. But he was never arrested for being a serial killer. He was never arrested for killing anybody.
Oh, okay.
He was arrested for other types of crimes. He was convicted in November of 1986 for beating and then shooting a woman in Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And he only served 3.5 years before they let him out in 1989. Well, in 1992, he was then again arrested in Cobb County, Georgia, for possession of stolen firearm and a stolen car. And in the back of that vehicle, they found a police scanner, a police jacket, burglary tools, and some other paraphernalia, like a false Tennessee driver's license.
Oh, gee whiz. Huh.
Yeah, really. And then he was released again a few years later. He only served a couple years and he was released in February of 1997.
Wow.
So these are the things he got arrested for and probably some other. I think he had a pretty lengthy little record of petty theft and burglary and things like that. But it was what happened in between those jail times and before those jail times that we didn't know about for nearly 20 years later. On April 4th, 1990, shortly after he was released from that stint of shooting the woman in Port St. Lucie, Genevieve Zdrycki, who was 28 years old, was asleep in her apartment, and somebody broke in, and they murdered her, and then they dragged her with pantyhose around her neck, used as a handle, into the bathroom, into a tub of water to try to wash away any evidence. Then on the bathroom mirror, they wrote, "Don't fuck with my family."
Oh my.
Yeah. And the police didn't really believe that had anything to do with the crime. They thought that was something to try to throw them off. So they never really took that part seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But they questioned quite a few people, people that used to live in the apartment complex where she lived. Nobody was arrested. There weren't any good suspects for it. Nobody saw anybody coming into her apartment. So a jogger found a picture and a latex glove on the jogging trail outside the apartment complex. But other than that, they didn't have really anything to go on. Then in 1992 was the arrest for the stolen firearm and the stolen vehicle. And so he spent some time in jail there until 1997, right? So yeah, in March of 1997, right after he got out of jail, someone had attacked a 14-year-old girl and raped her in Memphis. They tied up the three women that were in the apartment with her, then raped her. Didn't kill them for some reason, but left them there.
And this was in 97?
This was in 97. Remember, he got out of jail in February of 97. And by March of 97, he had raped this 14-year-old girl.
Wow, this is creepy because, you know, we were there at that time.
I wasn't. I'd already left. But yeah.
Did you? Okay.
Well, yeah, I'd already left.
All right. But the weird
thing is... You were, though.
I was still there. But the weird thing is what I'm hearing is everywhere he's been have been a place that I have lived. Like, I lived right in the little dinky town next to Port St. Lucie in Florida. And wow. Thank God our paths never crossed. But please continue.
So then in March of 1998... a man named Tony Shearer came home from work in Portageville, Missouri, and found his wife and his 12-year-old daughter shot to death.
Aww.
The son had talked to the mother, and then about 40 minutes later, the husband tried to call her, and she didn't answer the phone. So this guy was in the house less than 30 minutes. But in that amount of time, he killed the mother, tied her up, left her on the couch, face down, and raped and killed the 12-year-old.
Oh, my God.
In this amount of time.
Oh, that's horrible.
Then 2.5 hours later, he shot them to death. Then 2.5 hours later, he showed up in Dyersburg, Tennessee. And Portageville and Dyersburg are about 45 minutes apart. It's about a 45-minute drive from Portageville to Dyersburg.
Right.
This is all our old stomping ground. You know, I grew up around this area, so.
I know. I'm listening and I'm going, oh my goodness.
But he drove there and he found a woman by herself with her kids in the house. And he came up to the door and he said he was looking for this road and he couldn't find it. And she became a little suspicious. So when he said he was looking for Jeremy Taylor, did she know Jeremy Taylor? She said, let me call my neighbor. And so she called her neighbor who she didn't know. She knew her neighbor wasn't home.
Right.
But she called them and she came back and told him that the neighbor knew him. The neighbor knew Jeremy Taylor. And so if he went over there, they'd give him his address so he could go find him. And about that time, he said, let's take this inside.
Uh-oh.
And that was kind of his signature thing. He would go up to houses and he would pretend to be a service person or pretend to be a police officer or pretend to be something like that, there for a service call or looking for somebody. Right. And then he would say, let's take this inside. And he pulled a gun on her.
Oh, my.
This woman, she had it together. She jumped him when he pulled the gun because her kids were inside. So she jumped him and wrestled with him and hollered over her shoulder to the kids, get the shotgun.
Oh, I love it.
So when she said that.
Which they probably knew how to use.
Yeah. So when she said that, he yanked the gun away from her to get away. She got shot in the arm.
Oh.
But anyway, the ballistics on the bullet from her arm matched the ballistics on the gun that killed the Shearers.
Oh, wow. So at least something.
So they knew at that point that those two were tied together, but they didn't have any idea what the deal was, who the guy was. So since the little girl was raped, they had a little bit of DNA to work with. And they had a little bit of DNA from the girl in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, yay.
Miss Zdricky. And so they used that DNA to figure out that those two cases, her death and the death in Missouri and the attack in Tennessee, were all related. They didn't know who, because at that point in time, it wasn't enough to put in the CODIS database to try to do some sort of DNA match. They're just, that had just started kind of getting going, and the amount of DNA they were able to get out of the, it just didn't have enough markers on it for them to be able to put it in CODIS and do a search for known criminals. But they wouldn't have found it anyway, most likely, because he wouldn't have been in there. So after that happened in 1998, in 1999, he broke into, or 1990, late 1988, he broke into a woman's house in Paragould, Arkansas. And he tried to break in, and she ran him off and called police. So the police were on the lookout for some guy trying to break into women's apartments, but they still didn't have anything to go on as far as connecting him to the other ones. Then in January of 1999, the police saw a vehicle parked outside a Motel 8 in Kennett, Missouri. And they ran the tags on that vehicle because I guess they were suspicious of it for some reason. And they ran the tags on it and found out the tags were stolen. So they went to his motel room to question him about it, and he started a standoff with police and ended up killing himself.
I hate that.
And now they still didn't know that this was the guy connected to all those murders until about 2018.
Oh, wow. Recently, huh?
With all these Ancestry.com and all of those sorts of things coming out, DNA testing had advanced a whole lot. And they featured this case on America's Most Wanted in the 90s, but nothing came up. You know, the nobody identified the drawings they had of him. Nobody knew anything about it. But in May 2017, CODIS matched the DNA from the Memphis rape to the murders. And then in 2018, Parabon Nanolabs, that's people who do most of those DNA, like 23andMe and Ancestry.com, they do those matches, matched his DNA in genetic testing to his relatives, to his daughter. So police talked to his daughter, who was now grown up, an adult with a family of her own. Her name is Deborah.
She's probably mortified.
She was
freaked
in
out.
Alabama, and she said she knew something wasn't right with her dad. He was not a bad dad. He didn't beat on them or anything, but he would do weird things like strangle them or choke them and stuff like that when they were playing around and wrestling and stuff. So she just thought there was something odd about him, but she only lived with him for 2 years. The mother didn't stick with him for very long. She, I guess he got out of prison, came home to be with the family, and it wasn't working out, so then he,
thank God for small favors.
Then he died. Then he killed himself.
Right, right.
So, but they did some testing on her. She said, sure, I want to know for sure. I want to get this over with. Please, you know, take my DNA and run it up against him and see if that's what it is. So they exhumed his body, which was in the cemetery down the street from my mom's house.
Oh, my God.
And and they ran it. And I guess the daughters and it was a match, and they ran it against the cases, these cold cases, and it was a match. So they finally had connected their killer, who was called Mr. Maroon because he drove a maroon van.
Okay, gravy. Of course he drove a van.
And he drove a maroon van, and that's what he pulled up to the lady that wrestled him's house in, was a maroon van. So they started nicknaming him Mr. Maroon. They knew a maroon van was involved at that time. They don't know how many more victims of his are out there.
But now that the DNA is out there, they can find out.
They're looking. Yeah, they're looking into cold cases across like a half a dozen states that he was in.
Right.
On and off. Like Missouri, they're running them in Missouri, and they're running them in Arkansas and Tennessee and South Carolina and Florida and Kentucky and North Carolina and Illinois. He's been to all of those states at one time or another. And so they are still investigating and looking for similar crimes in those states so that they can try to match his DNA to those. They think there were a lot more victims than the three that they
He was really getting around, apparently, it sounds like. But we should also mention that where Kim's talking about Paragould, Arkansas, is just a spit away from the border of Tennessee. And it's
and
also
Missouri.
At a like a tri-state point where you can hop back and forth a lot within minutes.
And so, that's exactly what he was doing. He was hopping back and forth in jurisdictions.
Right.
So they weren't going to catch him very easily.
Right.
So they, they weren't, these guys didn't talk to each other. They weren't looking for him like that. I mean, they did do an America's Most Wanted show on him, but they still weren't connecting him to it. They were doing, this anonymous killer, and frankly, the drawings didn't look much like him in reality, other than they had some lip hair, so...
He had some fuzz. He had some peach fuzz.
And they weren't working together on it. They didn't have any reason to believe it was the same guy other than the two in Missouri with the bullets. I mean, in Tennessee, in Dyersburg and in Portageville, they knew the bullets matched the caliber and everything, but they didn't really have any way to know who he might be or where he might be or anything else, because I guess the things that he had gone to jail for before weren't things that they took DNA for at the time.
Right.
So he wasn't in the database at all. The only reason they figured out 20 years later that he did these things and 30 years later in one case is because of the family. The ancestry DNA test that people are, that's all the craze now that people are doing to find out who they belong to,
Well, that's really a pretty awesome thing on one hand, because all of those families can now have the closure that they need. But I really do feel for his daughter. It must be horrible to find out that your daddy did all that.
I'm sure to find out your dad is a serial killer is a really tough thing on anybody. And that he did those things to kids, and you've got kids, and you were about that same age.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, I guess. I don't know how old she was when he was at home, but, 12 years old, 14 years old, he's raping these girls. And I'm sure there are more. I'm sure they weren't his first because he was too good at it.
Right.
He was too good at breaking in or using excuses to get in people's houses for it to have been only a couple of times.
Right. He sounds like he was really smooth about it and just, I think I'm going to go get an ice cream and rape somebody today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So,
the thing is, I think he killed himself in that motel room because he thought they were there to arrest him for the murders. He had no idea they were there just to check out a stolen license plate on his car. And I think that's kind of funny. I think that's justice served.
Yep. By his own hand.
His own hand. He gave himself the death penalty, and that's good enough for me.
Me too. Well, that was my question, so you read my mind.
Oh, wow. Yeah?
That was my question. I was just like, well, why are we thinking in that? But,
yeah, well, I think he thought they were there for him for those murders. I think that, he was in Missouri, Portageville's not that much farther from Kennett. And so he probably thought, oh, they've caught up to me, and, I don't want to go to jail again, so I'm just going to kill myself. The wife, his wife or ex-wife or whatever she was, always told the daughter that she thought the police might have done it. She didn't know if he killed himself or if the police did it when they were having their standoff, but frankly, I don't care.
Right. That's all that suicide by cop, and that's fun to me, too.
Me, too.
So. And I bet you anything that, his baby mama knew. And that's why she pulled away from him. Keep her own.
She might have known. I don't know if she knew he was doing those things, but she might have known something wasn't right with him. I don't doubt that she might have known something wasn't right with him. I don't know that she knew he was killing people, though.
Right.
And that he was a serial killer. But, she might have watched him interacting with the kids and joking the kids. And she's like, I'm not going to keep my kids here with him.
Exactly. And, exactly.
Got him out of there. I don't know what the circumstances were for that.
Trust your instincts. And there it is. So at least.
Always.
You should always listen to that voice. It's pretty sincere.
It's there for a reason. And it helps you save yourself sometimes. So.
Exactly. Because sometimes I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he was just so practiced, it seems, at it, just from what I read, that I know there's got to be more out there besides three. So,
Well, were they searching for him very hard? Did your mama know about him at the time?
No, nobody knew about him until this DNA was discovered in 2018. Nobody knew that they had a serial killer living there among them. But, you know, he'd already been dead for 18 years at that point, or 19 years.
But it's still creepy after the fact.
It is. You know, this guy lived down the street from you. And it turns out he was a serial killer.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that your mom is okay and nothing worse happened while he was in y'all's town.
Well, he did what most serial killers do. He didn't poop in his own yard. He went outside the city. Although he did break in on that. He probably would have done the same thing to the woman in Paragould that he broke into her house, or was trying to break into her house.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd gotten in, but he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
That's horrible. Well, but yeah, good riddance to bad rubbish, as they say.
Yep, so long.
Yep, that's all she wrote. So is there any more to
That's your it. But that's how it fit into our Forensic Fridays, is because they didn't know for 20 years that he was a serial killer until Ancestry.com or DNA testing, whatever the girl used or whoever used it, bless them, for letting them use their DNA and test it on COVID, because you do have to sign something, I believe, that says you're willing for them to do that. And so whoever they got that from and connected it all together, good for them.
The permission. Well, maybe it was the daughter, and good for her, as hard as it must be, you know, to find that out. But she did right by those other families.
She did. She did what she felt like she needed to do to make up for what her daddy did. So good for her.
Yep. So that's some big marks in the good book for her.
Yeah.
Good job.
All right. Well, that's it for this week.
All right.
For our Forensic Friday.
We'll see y'all soon.
Bye-bye. Bye now.